BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now on BBC Radio Berkshire, Ian Lee.
It's 3 minutes past four. What date is it today? It's Wednesday, the 23rd of July. It's nice out there. Man alive, we've got a packed show for you today. We'll be talking to Andrea McLean a little bit later on. McLean or McLean? Which way would you go? Doesn't matter. She hosts Loose Women. She'll be talking about that and other bits and pieces. Be speaking to Shem to find out what you should watch on the TV tonight. Also speaking to a reporter in the Netherlands who is at the airport as some of the victims from the Malaysian air crash are being brought home. If you've not seen the images on the TV, it really is very, very powerful. Very sad day. We'll find out exactly what the mood is there. Need your help on this one as well, dear listener. I was involved in a situation last night. Fella swearing in the shop. I went up to him and said, "Oi, steady on, fella. There's kids here. Watch your language." Well, that brought out more swearing from the gentleman. I say gentleman. Would you do that? If you saw someone swearing or dropping litter or kicking a bus stop, would you get involved? Have you got involved? Or do you agree with some of the people on Twitter who said, "I was a little bit of a do-gooder last night"? 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
If you give me a call now, there's a very strong chance you might get on the radio. 0345 900 1041. Have you gone up to someone in the street and said, "Excuse me, would you stop doing that, please?" What did they say? He's got the best eyes in pop, I think, and he's got amazing eyes. There's a phone in. Who's got the best eyes in pop? I'll give you Smokey Robinson and Pete Townsend. Beat that. Afternoon, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. Where if you saw someone in the street effing and jeffing or dropping litter or just being, you know, unpleasant, would you go and say something? I spoke to a gentleman, I used the term gentleman very, very loosely, in a shop last night. He was swearing and there were loads of kids there. I just said, "Oi, mate, watch your language, there are kids around." He did not watch his language. If anything, his language got worse. And he told me exactly where I should go and how I should get there. And in fairness to me, I went, "Oi, a little bit of respect." And I walked away, and this is absolutely true. I walked away, I was shaking, and I went and hid at the back of the shop until he'd gone. I went and hid. I was really scared because I'm not a violent person. Would you have got involved? 0345 900 1041. Tony's in Chertsey. Afternoon, Tony.
Hi there, Ian.
Tony. Ian. Yes.
I was going to say, this is something of an experience for me. Oh. I've listened to you with amazement and enjoyment in the past when you were working for another BC, but with a different letter in front. Oh. And this is, as I say, this is wonderful. But I applaud your action with that guy.
Did I do the right thing, Tony?
Oh, yeah, definitely. Was he drunk?
Do you know what? It was last night. I was on my way home. It was 7:45. I think he was a little bit boozed up, yes.
No, I think this is right. You know, this is the way forward, I think, for society. You know, if the right-thinking parts of it can be, or people involved in it, can be able to have their say in some way or another, you know, and cooperate together to ensure that we all reach somewhere where it's better than it is here.
But some people don't want to make this place better. Some people don't care.
They should do. They should do. And I think they should be forced to see it, as you tried to do, Ian. I think that was brilliant.
I was very scared afterwards. I was, honestly, I was in the corner of the shop by the milk section. I was shaking and I was looking, I was peering round to make sure he'd gone. All mouth and no trousers, Tony. That's me. 0345 900 1041. I mentioned this on Twitter last night, at Ian Lee, if you're interested. And I got lots of support. I also got lots of people saying, "Well, what's it got to do with you? He's only using words." And I've not got a problem with swearing in the right context, in the right environment. I just think when there are kids there, these kids were 6, 7, 8 years old. We need to set an example, don't we? You can also go to facebook.com/BBC Radio Berkshire and you can have your say. The BBC Berkshire, excuse me, facebook.com/BBC Berkshire, and you can have your say there. Right, now, a species of insect which hasn't been seen in 28 years has been spotted where? Anybody? Anybody? Only in Windsor. Only the third time the royal splinter crane fly has ever been recorded. Well, Dr. Sarah Henschel is from Bug Life. Sarah, are you one of those people that saw it?
Yes, I am, yeah. I was lucky enough to see it, and I'm actually only the third person who's ever seen the species alive, so it's a real privilege for me to actually find it and see it.
Now, Sarah, did you really see it, or were you just trying to impress everybody at Bug's Life?
No, I definitely saw it. I can promise you, I saw it with my very own eyes. It must have been a really lovely photograph of it as well.
Well, fantastic. It must have been very exciting for you. When did you realise it was something so special?
Well, myself and a colleague, we were looking for it last summer and didn't find it. And then we had 2 days in High Standing Hill, just at the back of Legoland, really, in Windsor. And we've been searching for a couple of days for it. And we knew what it was going to look like. And it was getting towards the end of the day. And then we finally clapped eyes on this small black crane fly. It was the right size, the right colour. And we just knew instantly that was the species we were looking for, because it's quite distinctive, really, the shape of its body. And it's got a small yellow tip on the end of its kind of tail. So we knew it was what we were looking for.
This has only been seen in Windsor at the back of Legoland and Slovakia, is that right?
It is, yeah. So there's only two places in the whole of the world this fly has ever been recorded. And it was recorded firstly, I think it's in the early 70s, by a gentleman called Alan Stubbs, who also is involved with Bug Life. He's only seen it twice, and then there was one specimen found in Slovakia, and it's never been recorded since. So we didn't know if it was extinct or what was happening with it. So it's a great, great find to, you know, find that it's still there.
Why is it so rare, Sarah?
Well, it's one of these things that's got very, very specific requirements. It breeds in dead and decaying beech trees. So Windsor is perfect for that, because there's lots of really, really old beech trees which have got either sort of branches that have fallen off and have begun to rot, or they've got kind of rot holes in the trunk of the tree. So you don't get the right sort of habitat until you've got really, really old beech trees, and we just simply haven't got many of those left.
And what did you capture it? Do you put it on? What do you do with it?
Well, because it's such a rare thing, we didn't capture it. What we did is we took detailed photographs of it, so we knew exactly what it was,
yeah.
And we let it go on its way, because it's such a rare thing, and we wouldn't want to be responsible for capturing and killing the last specimen.
I'm worried, because I know that area very, very well. I don't live too far from it. I've got two little boys, 4 and 2, and one of their favourite things is catching mini beasts. They've got these little jars that have got magnifying glasses on, and they go around and they get ladybirds and ants and things, and they look at them and study them and let them go. My fear would be that they would catch this royal splinter crane fly, not realise what it was, and keep it in their jar for a few days, and it might die. That would be a disaster, wouldn't it?
No, it wouldn't really. I mean, the main thing is about getting people engaged and interested in bugs, because that's the problem. We haven't got enough people interested in them. So getting kids out there collecting bugs and creepy crawlers is fantastic. And the thing is, really, that these species, that they're just very elusive and hard to find.
Yeah.
It's never really going to be a situation where it's the last one. There'll be many more of them hiding away. It's just that they're very well good at kind of camouflaging themselves and being very secretive. So, no, we don't want to discourage anybody from kind of collecting bugs and creepy crawlers, especially not kids.
Oh, I'm not a fan of bugs. I don't like them. And so my boys come up, Daddy, look what I've found. And I have to pretend that I'm, you know, that I'm not disgusted by it.
Oh, I mean, they're wonderful creatures.
No!
They've got such interesting kind of life histories.
Oh,
they're
no,
so
Sarah.
Pretty to look at. And, you know, if you go on Bug Life's website, we've got loads of information there about all different creepy crawlers. So if mums and dads are out there, their kids come back with something and don't know what it is, go to the Bug Life website, see if you can find spot on the website what you found, and it can tell you a bit about it.
What is the, because it's summer holiday, so I know that lots of parents and kids will want to do this. What is the Bug Life website?
It's www.buglife.org.
Oh, nice and simple.
So nice and easy, basically, Bug Life. If you Google Bug Life, you'll find there's loads of information about all different bugs on there.
Did you go out for a cheeky shandy afterwards, after to celebrate?
Oh, yes, of course. Yeah, we had a bit of a celebratory beverage afterwards, yes, because it's such an important find for us.
Sarah, listen, really good news and really nice to talk to you. Thank you very much. That's Dr. Sarah Henshaw from Bug Life. It's 4:15.
BBC Radio Berkshire. Travel you trust. Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Let's have a look at what's happening on the... I liked her. She was good. I like people who are enthusiastic about what they do. And she, you could tell she loved her job. Right, let's have a look at the roads. The M25 clockwise. Junction 13, that's from Staines to Junction 16, the M40. It's queuing traffic again. That section's always busy. And anti-clockwise from 13 to Junction 10. It's slow. The M40 northbound, Junction 4 to Junction 5. One lane is closed due to an accident. Reading, Cemetery Junction, slow in and out of town. And also Oxford Road, stop start from Wilson Road to Cow Lane. And Maidenhead, the Bath Road, slow from Glenville Place to Boyndon Road.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
The Andrew Peake Show.
Be part of it.
Andrew's back tomorrow. Phil's back here tomorrow, so I'm off. Can I just say about bowls? I flipping love... I love... bowls. I love, not Crown Green bowls, yeah. I like the indoor bowls. And I have done ever since I was about 12. Now, it's considered to be an old person sport. But if bowls is on the television, on a Saturday afternoon, I will happily lay in front of the TV with a pot of tea and I will watch that. And my wife says, are you seriously watching this? I love it. I can't think of a more skillful sport. Wonderful, wonderful stuff. We're talking this afternoon about this gentleman, in inverted commas, I saw in a shop last night, 7:45, swearing away. There were kids there. I went, oh, excuse me, mate. It's funny, when I'm in those situations, I become a bit more common. I become the Britwell slough boy I used to be. Oh, excuse me, mate, there are kids here. Get on your way, he said, using indoor language. I said, hey, steady, bit of respect. I know, I become like something out of Minder or EastEnders. And I was wondering, would you do the same thing? Have you done the same thing? Maybe you've seen someone drop some litter and you've gone, excuse me, I think you dropped something. Or conversely, maybe you think it was none of my business. 0345 900 1041. Yes, you can call in. Or you can go to facebook.com/BBC Berkshire. Nick has posted on the Facebook, dropping litter is quite frankly the start of the end for a society. Is he being sarcastic? Why would someone want to disrespect the very environment they live in? No, he's not actually. People throwing stuff out of car windows infuriate me. And personally, I think fly tippers should be shot. Maybe taking things a little... We don't want to encourage shooting of anybody. Perhaps given a hefty fine would be good. 0345 900 1041. Hey, guys. It's summertime. And I'm assuming lots of you are going on holiday. Fantastic. Well, I've been speaking to a loose woman today. No, no, no. I mean one of the presenters of Loose Women. Andrea McLean, who says we need to look after ourselves while we're away.
On average, us Brits spend around 35 days a year getting our bodies beach ready, which is great. But apparently it all completely falls apart by day six.
What, day six of the holiday?
Yeah.
It's gone.
It's gone. We've undone all the good work that we've done in terms of whether it's going to the gym, watching what we eat, maybe losing a few pounds. Nope, we've taken one look at the smorgasbord of delight that is the buffet in the hotel, and we've dived in, and it's all gone to pot.
This is the thing, though, Andrew. When you go abroad, and when you, particularly if you go somewhere foreign, you want to have all the nice bits of food and all the nice cheeses and all the wines and all of that stuff.
Yeah,
you're not
absolutely
telling us not to do that, are you?
No, good. No, that's part of the whole thing of going on holiday, just as much as sightseeing and everything else. Absolutely, you need to taste all the yummy stuff. But I think what we also need to do is take into account that your tummy's not going to be used to eating different types of food. So rather than swinging a whole 180 degrees away from the kind of stuff you'd normally eat, we're saying dip your toe in rather than diving straight in.
No.
Yes.
No, come on.
Toe dipping is good.
No, face. I nearly said something terrible then. Face dipping is the thing. Surely the first day, I just steady.
I know what you mean.
Yes,
it's all right.
The first day, you get to the hotel room, you drop your bags off, you may have a shower if you're feeling posh, and then you go downstairs and dig in, don't you?
And yeah, dig in, tuck in, do all of those things,
but
don't go in with an Alan Partridge size plate.
That's
all I'm saying. Basically, what we're trying to encourage people to do is, yes, absolutely, taste the lovely cuisine that is there locally. But don't expect your tummies to react favourably to it, because basically if you're used to eating a certain type of food, it's going to take a little while for things to settle in. So what we're saying is start... I'm putting this so nicely,
I know you're mm-hmm. very delicate. Well done. Thank you.
What we're basically saying is obviously breakfast is the most important meal of the day. So try and start off with a good old bowl of All Bran or any other high quality and high fibre cereal. And that way, you can load up with fruit, you can load up with yogurt, you fill yourself up nicely, so you're not going to be tempted to snack and fall off the wagon. That is not in any way saying stop eating or don't try the local stuff. It's just don't go mad.
When I was once, for work, I was sent on a very luxurious... Well, it wasn't a holiday or a jolly, it was a job. Mm-hmm. But they sent me to Hawaii, to a really posh hotel, right?
Yeah.
And I'd never seen this before, the omelette bar. Have you come across the omelette bar?
I've obviously never lived.
Oh, you've never lived. At breakfast, the omelette bar, it's a fella with a load of ingredients, and you say, I'll have that, 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 and that, and he makes you as many omelettes as you want.
Oh, see, I love an omelette. Yeah. That'd be great.
Wouldn't it, you sing? But you're telling me to stay away from the omelette bar.
No, I'm not. I'm just saying, don't, you know, how many eggs do you need in an omelette, for goodness sake? How many ingredients do you need?
I need quite a few. I'm a hungry guy. What am I going to tell you?
But, I mean, one of the other things as well, in terms of, you know, keeping an eye on and making sure you stay healthy while you're away, because if you do end up, apparently again this came out in the survey, some people can end up losing 2 days out of their well-earned break feeling poorly and not even leaving the room.
Yeah.
So even if you're trying to be really good, you've had your cereal for breakfast, you may be having a late brunch with your omelette, is to make sure, if you're trying to be good and you're having your salad, check ahead, make sure that the water is good where you're going, if the tap water is clean, because it's all very well having salad, but you need to make sure it's been washed in clean water.
Don't have ice in your drinks. That was my mum's advice.
Your mum is right,
yeah,
as ever.
Good, yeah.
Always listen to your mum. Mum knows best.
I'm confused. That's the new song by Chicago. Not only does it sound like 1986, it's also really, really good. Chicago, what on earth are you doing to me?
BBC Radio Berkshire. Travel you trust. Every 15 minutes. And as it happens...
4:30, let's get the latest travel now. The M25 clockwise, junction 13 to junction 16. It's busy, there's queuing traffic. The M25 anti-clockwise, 13 to 10, there's slow traffic. The M3, both directions, junction 2, it's queuing traffic on and off the M25 due to roadworks. The A33 southbound, queuing from Green Park to the M4. And the trains, delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to signalling problems at Paddington.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire. BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the latest news now. Here's Michelle Cross. Right, let's get the weather here. The weather, yes, well, we've had that done perfectly by Alexis already. The sport, of course, with sports boy Nick. Nick, what have you got?
Well, Ian, four members of Sri Lanka's Commonwealth Games cycling team sparked a police response after going for a ride down of one of Scotland's busiest stretches of motorway.
Oh, dear. You crazy Sri Lankans.
They were spotted cycling down the M74, brave, before police intervened and informed them they were actually breaking the law.
Yes.
And congratulations to Reading FC women's striker Fran Kirby, who's been called up to the England squad to play Sweden.
Hey, did you just use the phrase horse feed specialist?
I did use the phrase horse feed specialist.
That's a very
Please
niche.
Don't challenge me to get them on the radio.
No, at all, but that's a very niche thing. I know that this is a really interesting story. The Queen's horse is maybe on morphine. One of the interesting side notes about this horse feed thing is that it's against the rules for horses to take morphine on race days.
Yes.
But that implies they're allowed to take morphine
on
other days.
364 days of the year.
That's crazy, isn't it?
Well, we need to... Well, let's look into it. Let's look it up.
This is your challenge. I want a horse feed specialist on this show.
I'll see what I can do.
My last show before 7.
I'll see what I can do.
Thank you very much indeed.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
This is Ian Lee. What time have we got? 4:36. It's Wednesday. It's the, oh gosh, what's it? It's the 23rd of July. It's all downhill from here, kids. Here's an interesting story. Bracknell might be infamous for its roundabouts, but they're about to be made a little bit more exciting, as 25 giant poppies have been commissioned to appear around the town's traffic circles. Well, Councillor Tony Virgo has been working on this project. Afternoon, Tony. Why have you undertaken this project?
Hello, Ian. It's really to commemorate the First World War, the centenary, and obviously all wars. But we suddenly, well, I suddenly saw, a firm that could make, they make models in North Ascot. And it just seemed a great idea, I don't know. And it seemed fun with a much more serious side to it.
So where exactly are they going to be? And it's one giant poppy per roundabout? How's it going to work?
Well, yes, roughly that. We've got two on one roundabout. You have to spot that. But we did a tour of all the roundabouts with our company, Ringway, and we chose roundabouts, A, that are sort of gateway roundabouts, Ian, coming in from Surrey and Hampshire and Reading area and so on, and also ones that can easily be seen and obviously won't muck about with the visibility for drivers.
Now, listen, what are the yobs like in Bracknell? I'm worried you might have some trouble and they might get vandalised or stolen. Does that not concern you at all?
That completely yob. I mustn't say this because it actually just puts my head on the chopping block, doesn't it? No, I'm not going to.
You're about to say they're yob-proof, aren't you?
Yeah, I'm not going to say it.
Good.
Thank you. No, we did think about it. The company that make it make models, and, you know, it's very, very strong fibreglass. It's been bolted into the ground. It's been cemented you know, and so on and so on.
So these are big. How big are they, Tony?
Well, they're roughly about 6'6" the ground. We couldn't get too big because otherwise, you know, we get into trouble. But we did one yesterday, actually, and I've had quite a few emails saying, you know, they liked it and thought it was rather iconic and it looked great.
When are they due to be unveiled? When can we drive around Bracknell and see them?
So, we start putting them in on Friday, Ian, and the idea is to have them all in and secured before the 1st of August, being the date the UK joined the First World War. So that's the crucial date.
Fantastic. Well, and Tony, please, for a second, don't think I'm implying that Bracknell is full of yobs. I just know that everywhere has its own little supply of them scattered around.
No.
I know Bracknell's a wonderful place. Tony, thank you very much. Sounds like a cracking idea. Councillor Tony Virgo there, talking about the giant poppies that are going to appear in Bracknell's roundabouts. Some of your comments on facebook.com/BBC Berkshire. I was in a shop last night. There was a horrible thuggish chap. Effing and jeffing, there were kids there. I stepped in and said, excuse me, mate, what's your language? There are kids there. He told me, in no uncertain terms, to get lost, shall we say. I did get lost. I followed his instructions very, very closely. But before that, I said, hey, a little bit of respect. And then I walked off shaking to myself. And I just wondered if you've done the same thing, or if you would have done the same thing. I mentioned it on Twitter as I was cowering in the back of the shop by the milk aisle, and some people said, oh yeah, nice one, Ian, great one, well done, good for you. Other people said, what's it got to do with you? Why were you sticking your nose in? It's only a few bad words. Get over yourself, mate. So I was wondering, would you have got involved? Have you got involved? Have you seen someone chucking a packet of crisps out of their car or dropping a Coke can? Or have you seen someone doing something that could be considered antisocial? And have you gone and got involved? I was outside a theatre in London going to see The Drowned Man in Paddington. And we're queuing up to get in. And there's a fellow walking along and he's got a crisp packet in his hand. And I saw him go up to someone. Then he went up to someone else. And then he went up to a lady in a car. He said, excuse me, is this yours? She went, oh, I'm so terribly sorry. Yes, it is. He said, well, please don't throw a litter on the street. I thought, well done you. It's only a tiny thing. It's only a small, tiny thing, but well done you. 0345 900 1041. Or you can text 81333. Start your text, Barks. Would you get involved? A couple of comments on facebook.com/BBC Berkshire. Liz says, smokers are the worst. They litter all day, every day, and they've got flipping ashtrays in their cars. And Rachel says, I have asked some older kids on the bus to stop their swearing, as I do not swear in front of my children. They were being very offensive, and there were elderly ladies on the bus also. They glared at me a lot, but they did stop. Well, over to you, dear listener. Would you get involved? Have you got involved? Or do you think, actually, do you know what? It's none of our business whatsoever.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
Oh, she's carrying on from our last story that's got connections with the First World War. People in Berkshire are being given the chance to grow their own history by planting free trees. That's right, free trees, as part of a national campaign to commemorate the centenary of the First World War. I love this story. I think it's fantastic. Over 3,500 trees have been given away so far in Berkshire. Well, I spoke to Chris Hickman from the Woodland Trust, which came up with the idea, and he told me a little bit more about it.
The idea is people can apply for tree packs from us, which are absolutely free, so that's great, no cost involved. And they come in different sizes, and then they can plant them in a community space. People can get involved at a planting event. And obviously the great thing is that hopefully those trees will be around for many years to come as well.
Well, what's in a tree pack?
So the tree packs come in different sizes. So there's 30 trees, which is the smallest pack. There's 105 trees or 420 trees.
Hang on, 420 trees are free?
Absolutely. I know, gosh. It's a bargain, isn't it?
Isn't it just? You don't get that these days. Go on.
I know, they say you don't get anything for nothing, but we are, you know, we're getting rid of that stereotype. But yes, 420 trees. So to give people an idea, that's about the size of a football pitch if you plant them spaced out. So obviously anyone listening who might be a local school, scouts, guides, any sort of community group or anyone that knows of a green community space that's got, you know, the potential to have a few trees in the ground, then they just go on the Woodland Trust website. There's a simple form to fill in, and then the packs will be sent out this autumn. And like we say, the great thing is they're free. It comes with all the advice. So even if you've never planted a tree before, all the advice will be in there in terms of how to plant them, how to manage them and maintain them. And like we say, it's a great way for people to commemorate the First World War. I'm sure many people listening will have relatives that perhaps were involved in some form, and hopefully these trees will be around for decades to come as well.
Well, how are you funding this then? I am genuinely shocked that you're giving away so much for free.
Well, one of the Trust's key aims is to get more trees in the ground.
Yeah.
So obviously, we have members that pay a membership. We have corporate partners. So we have partners, corporate partners and funders that will actually help us fund these tree packs as well. Planting tree cover, increasing tree cover in towns and cities as well. It's a really important thing.
And also, it's a great thing to do. If you got kids, 5, 6, 7, 8 years old, you plant a tree and that tree's going to grow with them, isn't it? That's a huge thing that can be a part of their life.
Yeah, exactly. Well, when I was at primary school, when I was, 5, 6, 7, we actually had a tree planting scheme, if you like. And I can still remember the trees I planted when I was a child. And I'm sure if I could remember where they were planted, then I could go back and see them now. And they would be,
That would be great, Chris, to take your family and say, look, I planted that. That's mine.
Exactly. And that's what, people across the country can do that. People in Berkshire, they can apply for these trees, plant them with the kids. And like you say, it's such a simple act that you can do. But, I've been to so many planting events and kids love it. They love getting mucky. Yeah. They love getting stuck in. And it is something that they can return to with their children and their grandchildren as well.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Imagine that. They're giving away free trees. I think that's wonderful. Afternoon, it's 4:45 exactly. I'm Ian Lee. This is BBC Radio Berkshire. Time to get a little bit of travel. The M40 northbound junction 4 to junction 5. One lane is closed due to an accident. The M3, both directions, junction 2. Queuing traffic on and off the M25. That's due to roadworks. The M4 London bound, junction 7 to junction 4B. That's Slough West to the M25. There's heavy traffic heading towards London. Let's do a couple more. The A33 southbound is queuing from Green Park to the M4. And let's do the trains. Delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to signalling problems at Paddington.
Get the latest travel you trust online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. Here's Michelle Cross. Excellent stuff. Thank you very much. Coming up in just a short while, we'll be speaking to Shem and finding out what you should be watching on the telly box tonight, if you've got one. Okay, Shem is here with his daily roundup of the television, and it starts today, doesn't it, Shem?
It does.
There'll be people dancing in the streets at this, not me. Not me.
It is. Well, look, I fully understand your worries here. It is the Commonwealth Games. It is up in Glasgow. And I can't remember a Commonwealth Games where this amount of excitement and hype it was involved. It was in Manchester not that long ago, I seem to remember. Mm. And I don't think it made the papers or, I mean, you know, there was hardly any coverage whatsoever. But I guess this is the London 2012 Olympic effect that has brought into this. So we have an opening ceremony. It is in Celtic Park in Glasgow. I don't think they've got quite the budget that Danny Boyle had, and Danny Boyle didn't have quite the budget they had in Beijing. So I'm not suggesting it's going to be on the cheap, but let's manage expectations here.
There'll be a couple of kids throwing a few paper aeroplanes and swearing, and that'll be it.
I think, I don't think it's going to reflect modern-day Glasgow in that respect, but I think there'll be a lot of people in funny costumes dancing. I have seen the mascot, which seems to be a rather frightening thistle.
Gosh.
Which
you don't want to mess with that.
No, you don't. But anyway, you have got something like 4,500 athletes who are going to parade through. There's a 100-meter wide TV screen, the biggest of its kind, that's going to connect the stadium with the rest of the world. You've got 71 nations coming, a lot of them, thankfully, won't be Russian or American or Chinese. So we may get some medals.
We might win something.
Exactly.
We
didn't do too badly in 2012.
So it's going to be a big spectacle, isn't it? And I do like these big spectacles and these big kind of affairs that kick things off. So.
Well, it's being done by the people that did the events at the... they did the opening and the closing ceremony of Athens 2004.
Oh, brilliant. Know. Okay, well, that was great.
So, yeah, so I think, you know, it should be, if nothing else, even if it's on a budget, it should have some good points.
Now, 9 p.m, BBC yes. 4, tonight. This, now we're talking. Our Planet from the Air.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, this... Already the title has got me sucked in like a fool. It sounds brilliant.
It is 90 minutes of basically aerial footage taken over 54 different countries, and really, I mean, it's a little bit new agey, some of it, but it's all photographed by, filmed by the very famous French aerial photographer Yann Arthus Bertrand.
Oh, of course, Yann Arthus Bertrand,
and he will be showing us quite how stunning, this is what your HD television is made for. I'm assuming you've moved into the 21st century and have an HD television.
Only just. Although there's no point, because the way the kids treat it by drawing on it and kicking it and prodding it, it's not going to last much longer.
Well, they're not the most robust of things. That's very true. Unlike our Pi television when I was a kid. It's what your HD was invented for, and if you can, watch it on BBC 4 HD because it will be absolutely stunning. That is, of course, if you aren't watching the Commonwealth Games.
Or you could tape it. You set the timer. On the VHS and record one and watch the other?
The timer on the VHS. I think we're beginning to show your vintage already,
Ian. No, to be honest, I never had a VHS, Shem. I had a Betamax.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I used to get beaten up at school for it. I did. It was better quality, though.
It was better quality until you couldn't buy the tapes anymore.
Exactly. Shem, excellent stuff. Thank you for these.
My pleasure.
This is BBC Radio Berkshire.
With Ian Lee.
So I was in a shop last night. Gentleman swearing. Can I describe him? Am I being... Is it unfair to describe him? No, this is what he looked like. He was short, fat, bald, earrings and tattoos. I smelt a whiff of booze on him. It was 7:45 in the evening. Swearing in front of kids. I stepped in and said, "Excuse me, mate. There are young ears. Just watch your language." He told me to go away. I said, "Oi, little bit of respect." And then I did go away, shaking like a leaf. Was I right to get involved? Adam's in Reading. Afternoon, Adam.
Hello, good afternoon. How are you?
Yeah, I'm good, thank you. Should I have got involved?
Well, to be honest, yes. Because, first of all, your language skills are fantastic. And unfortunately, to bore you with all this again, it's all about education, education, education. Now, I'm assuming you are reasonably well educated, hence the reason why you got a reasonably good job on the airwaves. And
I've done all right for myself.
Everybody's like you, Ian.
No.
You have to accept that how you put yourself across, even though you had perfect manners, what your mother taught you.
Yes.
You have to accept that other people facing you, maybe in a garage or in wherever it may be, they might not have that. They might, no. You know, the guy could have had his dad in prison for years, and he could have had a bad upbringing, yeah. And blah, blah, blah. All of a sudden, you sounded like a policeman, and ultimately a threat.
Well, but the thing is, Adam, yes, there are times and places for swearing, and if you swear in the workplace and everyone else is swearing, that's fine. It will be inappropriate for me at BBC Radio Berkshire to walk into the office where I hardly know anybody and start dropping some bombs. That would be inappropriate, okay? But,
yeah.
But also, you've got to agree, it's inappropriate in the self-service queue of a tiny supermarket.
You're totally right, and I totally respect what you're saying, but again, I have to drum it in back to you. You know, I'm pushing the ball back to you, Ian. It's, again, people are different. This is a new, you know, people have come with a rough background in some shape and form, or you never know who you're going to face.
Are you, Adam, I'm slightly confused. Are you saying that you're concerned I was going to get a wallop, or do you think that we should just let certain people from certain backgrounds say what they want, where they want?
Well, maybe. The way you put it, you sort of said, please, you said please and thank you very nicely. Would you stop swearing because there's children around, am I correct?
Yes. Well, I said, oi, what's your language, mate? There are kids around.
Yeah, well, again, oi doesn't sound very well.
It doesn't sound great. I kind of went down. I was worried if I went in with too posh a tone that it would have got nastier.
Yeah, well, someone like me, because I've been working abroad for so many years, and I've kind of been trained to deal with people. Sometimes you have to grammatically use your words correctly. Unfortunately, you have to nowadays.
Adam, listen, I've got to move on, because I want to squeeze another call in. Thank you very much. We all have a voice, don't we? We all have a phone voice, and we all have a plumber voice. And by that, when you answer the phone, we go to our posh voice. Yes, hello, it's Ian Lee here from the BBC. I was just wondering, and we all have the voice when the plumber comes round. All right, mate, do you fancy a cuppa? What size hat do you take, sir? A 10? Do you fancy a cuppa? We all have those. We all have those voices, don't we, Nelly from Wokingham? We have a phone voice and a plumber voice.
I don't know if I am. I do have a plumber voice.
You're using your phone voice now.
I'm not. That's my normal voice.
No, I don't believe it for a second.
It's my plum voice.
Nice. Nelly, would you get involved?
Yes. I used to be in the police, and people used to sort of prattle in front of me. And I would say to children, could you tone your language down? Because you don't quite know who is nearby. And do you actually know what the word means? If they said no, and I said, well, it's a bit ridiculous to use a word if you don't actually know what it means.
Yeah.
Because otherwise you're just going to confuse people with random words.
Mm.
But I was in a supermarket some weeks ago, and I was with two of my three children, and they were all behaving like complete loons. And
how old are your kids?
9, 13 and 16.
Oh, okay. It doesn't get any better when they're teenagers?
No, absolutely not.
Oh,
and we were just throwing our stuff onto the till, and this woman shouted at her children, if you don't shut up, I'm going to pull your pants down and smack your bum the hardest anybody in Waitrose has ever seen.
You're listening to BBC Radio Berkshire. Gosh, I don't think any of those words have ever been said on this radio station before. Well, I enjoyed my 3 days here. Thanks. Bye.
So, and my girls, they were slightly aghast, and I just cackled to myself thinking, is there a different kind of punishment depending on which shop you're in?
Yes.
I made contact with one of the checkout girls, and she was in the unfortunate position that she wasn't able to chuckle back at me.
No.
But I was, you know, hands on the stomach, pretending to run around laughing. Afterwards, she said that was just so difficult because that woman was so very, very angry that the way that she was talking to her children was total and utter exasperation. There was nowhere for this woman to go.
Yeah.
And I said, well, if you're going to suggest a punishment to your children, you've got to dole it out, because otherwise they won't believe you.
Nelly, if you in that situation, and I've often been in shops, and it's always in shops for some reason, where I've seen a parent not treating their child, I think, but particularly respectfully, either grabbing them by the shoulder or shouting at them or sometimes even hitting them. I've never got involved in a situation like that. Would you do that?
It's a very, very difficult
Isn't it?
It's awful, because if you do, then you're getting part of a situation that you might not want to be part of. You don't know, as the previous caller said, you don't know what has led up to that situation. You don't know if there's any sort of any demands or any specifics about that family that might make it the way that it is. I would make eye contact. That's the first thing that I would do. If was then treated to a look of daggers, I would then back off.
Yeah.
But it's in my nature to sort of try and solve situations. If people look as if they need some kind of intervention, then I'd probably do a, you know, a sort of a watery smile kind of thing, but I'd never offer support, advice. I wouldn't tut. I only tut in the comfort of my own car on school run.
Nelly, thank you very much indeed. The old watery smile technique, that'll bring them to their knees. Nelly, fascinating, thank you. We can kind of expand this out a bit. So we've gone from me having words with a chap who was swearing in a self-service queue of a supermarket last night to, we can talk about people dropping litter, but also as well, if you saw someone mistreating their kid, what does that mean? Shouting at them, swearing at them, grabbing them, yanking them, hitting them? Would you get involved? 0345 900 1041, or you can text 81333. Start your text box.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Let's get some travel. M25 clockwise, junction 13 to junction 16. There's queuing traffic. And anti-clockwise, 13 to junction 10. There's slow traffic. The M40 northbound, 4 to 5. One lane is closed due to an accident. The M3, both directions, 2. Junction 2, queuing traffic on and off. The M25 due to roadworks. The A30, it's busy tonight, by the way. A33 southbound, queuing from Green Park to the M4. In Maidenhead, Bath Road slow from Glenville Place to Boyndon Road. And on the trains, delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading due to a signalling problem at Paddington. So you see a mum or a dad grabbing their four-year-old by the shoulder, yanking them and swearing at them in a shop. Do you get involved? It's a big thing. You're making a judgment on their parenting skills. And I know if someone did that to me, I'd be absolutely furious.
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now on BBC Radio Berkshire. Ian Lee.
Afternoon, this is Ian Lee sitting in for Phil. Don't panic, dear listener. He's back tomorrow from 4. He's back for the rest of the week, so don't worry. Lots to talk about between now and 6 o'clock, including we'll be finding out exactly what's been happening today as the bodies of many of the victims of the Malaysian air disaster are returned back to Europe. We'll also be talking about a little bit of nuclear waste. Anybody? Anybody? Should we be concerned of barrels of nuclear waste being left lying around? I don't know. And if you saw someone swearing in a shop, or you saw a mum or a dad being a little bit rough with a child in a supermarket, would you get involved? 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire. BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now, the building developer Costain has been fined £525,000 for the death of a construction worker during the building of a shopping development in Newbury. 41-year-old Mark Williams died when the telehandler he was operating fell on top of him in July 2011. Well, BBC Radio Berkshire's Catherine Bolsover has been following this story and joins me in the studio. Catherine, just give us a little bit of the background to this case, please.
Well, it was the summer of 2011 when the father of two, Mark Williams, was crushed under a telehandler. That's like a cross between a cherry picker and a crane. And it was while he was lifting tiles onto a roof at the Parkway development in Newbury. Two companies, the developer Costain and the contractor Attlee Roofing, went on trial at Reading Crown Court for breaching health and safety rules. The trial heard Mr. Williams had to make too many short turns with the machine in a crowded area. Mr. Williams's family said that he'd complained about working conditions. Costain was then found guilty of failure to ensure the health, safety and welfare of a worker.
And Costain was sentenced today.
Yes, the Maidenhead-based company was fined £525,000, having also been found guilty of exposing another employee to a risk of harm and failing to carry out proper risk assessments. Passing sentence, Judge Angela Morris said Costain fell short of its obligations and that lessons had not been learned from two previous incidents involving lifting equipment. In a statement delivered after the verdict, the family said they had mixed feelings about the result, adding that he was let down by Costain and Attlee's Roofing. The day before he died, he told Costain in a meeting that someone was going to get killed, and sadly for us, someone did get killed. It was him, it said in the statement.
Oh dear. Kathleen, thank you very much for that. Now, earlier in the year, our reporter Ben Moore spoke to Shenda Williams-Long. That's Mark Williams' mother.
He was a good son. He was a really, really good son. I know every mum says it, but he really was a good son to us. He really was, and we are absolutely devastated. He loved life. He just absolutely loved life. He lived it to the full.
Because we've just been up to see him, and we're sort of getting on for 2 years now.
Three years.
Yeah, it's just not getting easy. It'll never go away.
It'll never, ever, ever go away. Because you're not supposed to bury your children. And I never, ever dreamt that it would happen to our family. Never.
Mark's just at the end of the garden, isn't he? So he's still very much a big part of your life.
Well, without him being buried where he is, we've all got somewhere to go to see him, to take a birthday cake. All our birthdays, we sit up there to see him. His dad lights a candle every night, and it's just, we feel as though he's still with us while he's there.
Because you were a really close family, weren't you?
Very, very, very close. Very. And it's just a big hole. It's just a big hole. But we do try our best just to still do the same things we used to do when Mark was here, which is what he would want us to do.
Very sad story, and we'll be having more of that a little bit later on in the show. Well, from one sad story to another one. Two planes carrying bodies from crashed flight MH17 have landed in the Netherlands, where a day of mourning for the 298 victims has been declared. Experts there will begin to identify the dead, most of whom were Dutch. Pro-Russian rebels have been widely accused of shooting down the Malaysia Airlines plane on the 17th of July. UK government sources say intelligence shows rebels deliberately tampered with evidence, moving bodies, and even placing parts from other planes in the debris. Well, I've been speaking to Menno Remmers from Radio Netherlands, who was at Eindhoven Airport when the planes landed. He described the scene.
Well, it was impressive, but also very sober. No music, no speeches, just the two planes and the military, the men who carried out of the planes those coffins to the cars, the funeral cars, 40 in total here on the platform. First, there was the Hercules C-130 from Dutch Army, landed here from the Dutch Air Force, and then followed by the C-17, 2 minutes later, touched down at 10 minutes before 4 o'clock, the C-17 with 24 bodies, and the C-130 with 16 coffins landed here on Eindhoven Airport. Very impressive. There were his family here also, about 1,000 people sitting in the bright sun. It's a very sunny day. It's a contradiction. It's a very sunny day, but also a very, very black day here at Eindhoven Airport.
And is there, I mean, this is a unique experience for you and your country, folk, also for the world to see. Is it noisy there? Is it quiet? Well, try and describe, if you can, you know, what you saw and heard as this was happening.
Well, I'm only in Eindhoven, but I heard from my colleagues that everywhere in the country, buses, trains were put still standing. Bells of churches rang loud and clear, and then there was that minute of silence broadcasted on all national stations here in Holland. And then you see this is a military base, but also a civil airport. All air traffic has been put down. There's no commercial flights going on. So after both planes landed, it was very, very quiet. also in that 1 minute, in that moment. No speeches, no further music. And now it's waiting till the funeral cars will drive in about 5 o'clock, I think, 5 o'clock Dutch time, 4 o'clock your time, and they will drive straight to from Eindhoven to Hilversum, to a military base, and there identification will start immediately. It's a 1 hour drive, and the highway will be all traffic will be sided away, so the funeral cars can drive straight in one line those 100 kilometers from Eindhoven to Hilversum.
They're going to follow each other and drive in a straight line. That's going to be a very powerful image, isn't it?
A very powerful image because, well, Eindhoven military base, here we did see funeral cars here before, after, because, well, it's a military base, and when people died in Afghanistan or Mali just right now, not happened yet, but, well, then Eindhoven is the airport where soldiers do come back to their relatives, to their family, but then it's just one or maybe two funeral cars, and now there are 40. That's quite impressive to see 40 of those cars on a very hot landing strip here in Eindhoven.
It's just so sad, isn't it? What has been the mood in the country the last couple of days? And do you think now that the significant number of those dead are back home, do you think things will change, attitudes will change?
Well, this was a week of anger, because we saw a lot of soldiers, a lot of separatists there in Ukraine around the wreckage, around the bodies, and people felt sadness but also grief, were angry, and now this is an official moment, dignity, for the first time during this disaster here in Eindhoven. But it's also difficult because it can take a lot of time, maybe some days, some weeks, maybe several months before relatives who will know if their family, their victim of this crash, of this immense disaster, will be at home, because we don't know how many Dutch or Australian victims arrived here yet, because there's no identification yet. That all has to take place, and it will take a long, long time, is expected, and that's very, very difficult.
But there's going to be is there going to be a day of mourning?
Yes, that's since the Queen Wilhelmina died in 1962, we haven't got such kind of a day here. We don't have that kind of, well, we have, of course, the remembrance of the Second World War on the 4th of May every year. It's a bit that kind of situation, like the remembrance of the Second World War. Then we have 2 minutes of silence right in Amsterdam, on the dam there. It's quite the same situation right now, just all over the country. Everybody is silent, no traffic, no buses, no trains running, just for a minute, no air traffic. It's awkward.
Do you know, while I'm talking to you, Mina, I'm just looking online, and I can see some pictures of the first victims returning. You've got the King, the Queen, the Prime Minister there. It does look very somber, obviously, and respectful. What's the mood there in terms of action against these Ukrainian separatists, and indeed against Russia and Putin? Do people there think that the EU is doing enough to speak up for the victims?
Well, I think that now the concentration is right on this moment. I don't think that this is a very political day for the people here.
Yeah.
But I think that there is a lot of anger, a lot of protests about how it all went this week there on the site. Those separatists carrying around in the wreckage, destroying evidence, maybe. So yes, that's, you've heard it. That's obvious here. That people think, well, certainly Putin, certainly Russia, there had to be some action against it.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
5:16, this is Ian Lee on BBC Radio Berkshire. Let's have a look at some of the roads. The M25, clockwise 11 to 16, queuing traffic. Anti-clockwise 16 to 10. Well, that's got a lot worse. Slow traffic. The M3, both directions, junction 2. There's queuing traffic on and off the M25. That's due to roadworks. The M4, London bound, junction 7 to junction 4B. There's heavy traffic towards London. The A34, northbound, slow from the M4 junction 13 to Beeden. The A329M is down to one lane in both directions between Reading and Winnersh due to roadworks. And on the trains, there are delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to signalling problems at Paddington.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Let's get the news now. Here's Michelle Cross. Michelle, thank you very much.
This is BBC Radio Berkshire.
With Ian Lee.
Yes, we'll be taking your calls in a little bit, but right now, Berkshire's nuclear weapons factory will remain under increased scrutiny by a government nuclear safety watchdog. The atomic weapons establishment at Aldermaston was served an improvement notice in 2013 by the Office for Nuclear Regulation, my gosh, there's a terrifying title, because of ageing facilities and a number of safety cases. Well, BBC Radio Berkshire's Matt Treacy has been following this story for us and joins us now. Afternoon, Matt. Can I ask you to go on that one? Simply because I don't have the technological know-how to make that microphone work. There we go, we can hear you. Good afternoon, Matt. Now, AWE, it's had quite a long list of problems over the past few years, hasn't it?
It definitely has, and we've been following the...
For some reason, though, hang on a second. Try now.
Hi.
I'm so sorry.
Listen, it's okay.
It's a new studio to me, and I'm making a pig's ear of it. Let's ask the question again. AWE, it's had quite a long list of problems, hasn't it?
No, it really has, and it's a facility that has had its problems over the years. I mean, just last year, 2013, it was criticised for leaking radioactive gas into a stream, although the Environment Agency in that case did say the low levels of radiation didn't represent an environmental hazard. It was fined £200,000 for a safety breach during a fire at the site back in 2010. There's also been an issue where they've been trying to deal with 1,000 drums of nuclear waste on the site.
Excuse me, a what?
1,000 drums of nuclear waste. Now, these all sound, whenever we deal with things at, you know, AWE or talk about atomic incidents there in any way, they always sound very, very, you know, kind of eye-catching and ear-catching to us, but a lot of the time, actually, the radiation levels that the site are dealing with are incredibly low, sometimes not even registered, but ultimately, the site was stripped of 3 health and safety awards that they were awarded following an investigation into that fire in 2010, and they're still under investigation for a faulty fire alarm as well.
Okay, so what did the Office for Nuclear Regulation say in its most recent report?
Well, they did pick up on that thing you're talking about, the 1,000 drums of what they call intermediate level waste. They were hoping that they would be dealt with by February of this year, but they haven't been. They're trying to work out whether they can do something to get them to meet their requirement to deal with that. The Office for Nuclear Regulation also says they're in discussion with AWE about events relating to what they call shortfalls in the operability and availability of building fire detection systems. That, to you and me, are smoke alarms and fire alarms. For both matters, they are considering whether they'll need enforcement action and whether that would be appropriate. But they've said, and this is really key, I guess, when we talk about things that do sound, you know, quite ear-catching and eye-catching, that there are no immediate safety concerns and that progress on a lot of these things have been made. Now, obviously, we did want to speak to someone from AWE. They wouldn't come on the radio today, but have sent us a statement that says delivering safe and secure operations is a core priority for AWE. It fully supports the Office for Nuclear Regulations focus on continuing to improve that effective hazard control and maintaining high standards. Of course, this is one of these five locations in the UK that the MOD used to store nuclear waste from submarines, so it will always be an area that is under this kind of scrutiny.
Matt Tracy, thank you very much.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Berkshire News and Berkshire Stories with Ian Lee.
Don't forget, we're taking your calls. Just a little reminder, I was in a shop last night. I saw a gentleman, I use the term very loosely, swearing. And there were kids there. And I said, oh, excuse me, mate. What's your language? You've got young ears. He swore at me. And I said, oi, a little bit of respect. And I walked off trembling and indeed a shaking. Would you get involved? Have you got involved? Maybe you've seen someone dropping litter on the floor or swearing or kicking a bus stop. Would you get involved? Have you said something? Excuse me. And going off on an ever such a slight tangent, although it's linked, if you saw a parent, a mum or a dad, shouting at a kid, indulging in bad parenting, whatever that means, whatever your definition of that is, would you get involved? I very, very nearly did at, where were we? We were Whipsnade, I think. Was it Whipsnade? I think it was Whipsnade. And I saw a mum having a real go at a little girl who was about 4 years old. It was really quite unpleasant. And I was steeling myself to go in and say, is everything all right? They moved on and it didn't happen, but I was close to it. What would you do? Or do you think, come on, none of your business, butt out. Give me a call, please. 0345 900 1041. Our operators are standing by to take your calls right now. 0345 900 1041 is the telephone number if you want to give us a call. If you give us a call now, you stand a very good chance of getting on the show. Okay, let's go back to our top story this afternoon. The building developer Costain has been fined £525,000 for the death of a construction worker during the building of a shopping development in Newbury. 41-year-old Mark Williams died when the forklift truck he was operating fell on top of him in July 2011. Well, I'm joined now by Steve Hill from the Health and Safety Executive, and he's been following this story. Good afternoon, Steve.
Hello there.
Obviously a very tragic story and very sad. You kind of expect when you go to work that you're going to be safe, don't you?
Absolutely, Ian. And I think this is the very strong message that cases like this would send out, hopefully, to all sorts of other duty holders in the construction industry. As you say, Mark Williams went to work as normal to operate a piece of machinery called a telehandler. Because he didn't have enough space in which to operate something that the principal contractor, Costain, had been warned about, including by him, he did his own work, and very sadly, he didn't come home that night.
I've been trying to get an image. I don't know what a telehandler is. I've heard this word bandied around on BBC Radio Berkshire all day. What do you know what it is?
Most people would think of a telehandler as being a large forklift truck.
Oh, okay.
So in this particular case, it's like a forklift truck, but it has a long extending boom so that it can reach up high. But when that boom is at ground level, it sticks out a long way forward, making the machine longer.
Mm.
And so the reason that Mark felt that he needed to raise it up into the air, which is what ultimately caused it to be less stable and to turn over, is because that allowed him to have a little bit more room to manoeuvre the vehicle and to therefore be able to turn it around as he needed to load some tiles up onto the roof.
Mark knew this was dangerous, and in fact, the horrible irony is he went to his bosses the day before saying, I think someone's going to get killed. What power do workers have if they suspect that the environment they're working in isn't necessarily that safe?
Well, the evidence suggests that Mark did exactly the right thing. He brought to his employer and to the main contractor's attention the fact that there was a dangerous situation going on, and the evidence suggests that other people may have done exactly the same thing. So your question is, what power do they have? Well, it's very, very difficult because, of course, people who are on construction sites or indeed in factories or elsewhere are always working for someone. There's always that tension between making a fuss and complaining about something that is quite clearly unsafe, which is entirely reasonable and sensible, and a good employer would take notice of that and do something about it. But there's that tension between doing that and being under a bit of pressure to complete the job. Now, we'll never know exactly how that balance was struck on this occasion, but of course what we do know is that Mark and others raised the issue, but it wasn't dealt with, and then very sadly the tragic consequences that we know about occurred.
A mum's lost her son, a man's been killed. If I'm honest, £525,000, it doesn't sound that much to me.
Well, I think all we can say there, Ian, is what the judge suggested in her summing up, and that is that whatever penalty she gave, it was not in any way reflective of Mark or anybody else's life. That's not what her and the court's role is about. Their role is to assess all the evidence that they heard over a 5-week trial, and she then needs to come to a conclusion as to what the appropriate criminal sanction is for, in this case, Costain as a company. And in doing that, she hopefully is sending out a very serious message to those involved in the industry to say, you know, this is a very serious failing and you all need to sit up and think, what can you do to improve? It's not about reflecting, of course, the value of a life.
How does it work on a site like this? Would the health and safety, would someone like you go in and examine the site, or is it all self-contained? Would it all have been done by Costain?
Well, the legal duty is on the lies with the contractors. In this case, the principal contractor was Costain's. So they have duties, and all the subcontractors working for them have duties to comply with the law. The Health and Safety Executive, my organisation, puts out all sorts of guidance on our website and in other ways. And where resources allow, we make unannounced visits to sites and to elsewhere, and of course we also have to investigate all sorts of serious well, obviously in this case deaths and other serious injuries, and like lots of other organisations, of course, you know, we've had to pull in our belt, so there probably are not as many inspections as we would like, which would make it all the more important that duty holders take proper precautions in managing their serious risks.
And of course, sadly, Steve, health and safety has become a joke, hasn't it? Because you hear all of these silly stories about councils not putting on fetes and schools not doing egg and spoon races for health and safety. But what it really boils down to, its truest essence, is protecting workers, protecting people like Mark, isn't it?
Well, that is absolutely right, Ian. And for many years, the Health and Safety Executive has had a campaign that we've called Sensible Health and Safety, that we've tried to sort of counter all the rumours that often appear in some parts of the press, that it's not about conkers, bonkers and all these sorts of things. Yeah. It's actually about trying to prevent very serious injury and ill health. And in some cases, as you rightly put at the beginning of this interview, situations where somebody goes to work, do their normal job, and sadly doesn't come home at night. That's what we're interested in. We're not interested in the triviality and some of the other things that sometimes talked about in the press.
Do you think all those stories about kids can't play conkers and kids can't climb trees, it's done a disservice and makes your job in some ways a little bit harder?
Well, I think you're quite right, and we do our best to whenever we come across anybody, whether it's businesses or individuals, to explain that the vast majority of what we deal with are very serious risks where people can get badly hurt, killed, or suffer serious ill health that can affect them for the rest of their life. Of course, sometimes, particularly when it comes to children or the elderly or other vulnerable groups, some of the lower risk issues get talked about more. But realistically, it's where people are going to get seriously hurt or affected for the rest of their life, where we're trying to encourage people to do proper risk assessments and take precautions.
Steve, it's a tragic story. I really appreciate your time on BBC Radio Berkshire this afternoon. Steve Hill from the Health and Safety Executive. It's 5:31.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Right, let's have a little look at some of the roads. The M25, clockwise 11 to junction 16, queuing traffic. Anti-clockwise 16 to 10. Oh, gosh, that's got busy. There's slow traffic. The M4, London bound, junction 7 to junction 4B. That's heavy traffic. The A404, southbound, there are queues from Marlow to the Bisham roundabout. And on the trains, there are delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to a signalling problem at Paddington.
And then it's past.
Oh, that's the wrong. Oh, no. You can tell it's my last day, can't you, Michelle? I've got fat fingers. Now, this should be the right bit of music. Bear with me 1 second.
Get the latest travel you trust online.
bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Apologies for that. Let's get the news now. Here's Michelle.
Four members of Sri Lanka's Commonwealth Games team sparked a major travel alert after cycling down one of Scotland's busiest motorways. Police stopped the group on the M74 and advised them to move off the road.
Tough guys, huh? Tough guys. Disqualify them immediately, I suspect. Michelle, thank you very much. Let's get the weather with Alexis.
Thank you very much. Good evening. Well, temperatures today reached a high of 29 Celsius across the Royal County. For a full 10-day forecast, log on to our website, bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
Thank you. Oh, Alexis, sorry. Naughty. thank you very much. Fair play. We're all making mistakes today. I think it's the heat, Nick.
Yes.
I'm looking at you.
Yeah, because you're teeing me up for one, aren't you?
No, I'm looking at you to be the rock that brings back professionalism to this show. Do you think you can do it?
I will take on the mantle.
Let's see what you've got.
Let's try it. The Sussex manager, Mark Robinson, says the media focus on Pryor and Captain Alistair Cook has been merciless.
Look at that, you see. You've made us all look good. Nick, thank you very much.
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Right, if you want to give us a call, you can give me a call, by the way. 0345 900 1041. We're asking, would you get involved? Would you get involved if you saw something happening? Now, for me last night, it was a gentleman effing and jeffing using indoor language in a supermarket in front of some kids. I mean, there were kids there. He wasn't swearing at them, but he was just shouting out loud and swearing and stuff like that. And it was not really that appropriate. And I said to him, excuse me, there are young ears listening. He told me to get lost in no uncertain terms whatsoever. I said, look, young ears, watch yourself, mate. And I walked away. I was terrified. A couple of years ago, I wouldn't have done something like that. But last night, I just kind of felt, is it my age? Is it because I'm a dad? I don't know what it is. But there was something about it that made me think, do you know what? I'm going to get involved and I'm going to say something. Would you do it? Have you done it? Or do you think, actually, do you know what? It's none of your business. You shouldn't have said anything. And we were speaking to Nelly, I think it was, earlier on, and it's kind of, the conversation has moved on a little bit to, if you saw a parent shouting at a kid, dragging a kid, maybe even hitting a kid, would you get involved? That's a tough one, isn't it? Your experiences, please, with getting involved. We can just label it at that, and we can be as vague as you want. You can email ian.lee@bbc.co.uk. You can text 81333, start your text 3CR. But the best way to do these things, because then we can have a conversation, is to give me a call, please. If you call now, there's a strong chance you'll get on the show. 0345 900 1041. 0345 900 1041. It's the Beatles. Hello, goodbye. Man, you've got to. You know, there are some people in this world who don't like the Beatles. How is that even possible? There are some people who do not like the Beatles. Oh, dear, really? Really? Oh, dear, we'll take some of your calls in a bit. 0345 900 1041. Earlier on in the day, I was lucky enough to speak to Loose Woman, Andrea McLean. I asked her how the show's going.
We broke up for the summer last week.
Right.
And, back in September.
Where do you film that these days? Is that in London?
It's in London.
In the London studios?
Yes.
Because I've worked there. The food there isn't very good, is it?
No, it's had a big old makeover. It's amazing.
Has it?
Yes,
it really?
Really, really good.
Oh.
I've been in that building 17 years.
Gosh. Yes,
I know that canteen very well.
They'll let you out one day. Yeah, no, I knew it maybe about 10 years ago and it was a little bit ropey.
No, it's good. It's really, really good.
Oh.
And what's really exciting is obviously it's got the same view as the, I won't say the name, but a very famous restaurant that's next door. And it's just the canteen. It's brilliant. I take guests there. Just swipe my pass and head on up.
Just show up. Loose Women looks like the most fun job in the world, doesn't it?
Yes, it is. And I'm the luckiest lady in the world because obviously in terms of telly, it can be that the older you get, sorry, love, you know, there's someone younger and perkier is banging on our door. With Loose Women, it's all about women and experience and life and stories and opinions. So actually, the older you get, the more you've got to offer. So it's fabulous.
Are you aware of that prejudice? Because it is noticeably unfair. As I'm a bloke, as I'm getting older and greyer, I kind of get more. I'm getting more work, but it's the opposite for women, isn't it? Are you aware of that trend?
Yeah.
And is it changing at all?
No, it's ever thus. It's always been that way. But it depends on the kind of job that you're after.
Yeah.
If you're after the same kind of job in your 40s that you were in your 20s, it stands to reason that you're not going to get it. Whereas I think if you shift slightly and you're aiming for slightly different types of jobs, maybe more consumer driven rather than pop or fashion or what have you, it sort of stands to reason then that you'd have more experience. So in terms of how I work, no, I'm actually busier than I've ever been as well, but that's because I've now got, you know, almost 20 years experience of doing the job.
Obviously when you do Loose Women, you host it, there are kind of things that you are guided to talk about. How much of it is rehearsed and how much of it is you lot just chatting and having a laugh?
Well, the only bit that's rehearsed is my links in and out.
Right.
Obviously, because I host it, I need to make sure I'm across all of those. Everything else is completely live and unscripted.
Wow.
Obviously, we know what the topics are going to be. Cause we need to be aware of people's thoughts and opinions. But nope. Nothing is rehearsed. It is all organic.
See, how exciting. Because TV these days, I think, is for the most part, is so safe. And people are terrified of something spontaneous happening on a television show that we hadn't rehearsed.
Yeah.
And it's nice to know that you've kept that element going.
But do you know, this is why I love Loose Women. Because there is no other programme like it on the TV. Not only that is four ladies, you know, aged from mid-30s to late 60s, giving their opinion and stories, but also because we're live, you know, we had it just a few weeks ago. There's a breaking news story. I could hear it breaking it in my ear in terms of the producers, and we were able to drop an item live link to outside the place where the story was happening and then react to it in the same way that people at home were reacting. So we're basically we're the mouthpiece of women at home. We were able to say what they thought about the situation, and there's no other program can do what we do.
Go on, love it.
It's great.
Now, be honest. Who's been the most awkward guest? We've all had an awkward guest. Go on.
Yes.
Go on.
Oh, gosh. I can tell you who was the most awkward in terms of making my job really, really difficult.
Go on, who's that?
He's a very nice man, but it was Seal. The singer,
really?
Seal.
I wasn't expecting that, really.
No.
Why?
Because he fell asleep in his dressing room and no one could wake him. And as I was reading the link saying, and coming up is, and the director said to me, Andrew, I'm really sorry, I don't know what to say, but he's not there. I said, is Seal, who actually isn't here right now, and we now have 8 minutes to fill. But it was fine. We talked about it, then we heard banging and crashing, and he appeared on the stage looking a bit sleepy.
Don't wake the Seal. That, again, the beauty of live TV. And
love
that's
it.
Great, magical.
It is,
hey,
great.
Listen, so you've been telling us about holidays and what we should do and how we should eat a little bit better. Where's your number one holiday destination in the world, Andrea?
Oh, do you know, it's somewhere I've never been, and it's on my bucket list. I want to go to the Maldives. I've never been, and they look so pretty.
I went there for my honeymoon.
Is it like what they say?
It's the best thing in the world.
Yay for you.
And we didn't know, we turned up and there was this young lad there for us. And we're like, who are you? He said, oh, I'm your butler. We had a butler for the week.
Wow.
And we didn't know, you have to go. It is paradise.
And how did you eat while you were there?
I ate everything that was put in front of me, I'm afraid.
Did you?
Yeah,
but was it lovely things like fruit and vegetables?
It was all fresh. It was all wonderful. It was amazing.
Oh, I really want to go.
Paradise.
I really want to go.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
I could never afford to go to the Maldives again. That was a one-off. Still paying for it 6 years later. Right, 5:46, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. Quick look at the roads. M25 clockwise, junction 11 to 16. It's queuing traffic. And anti-clockwise, 16 to 10. It's slow there. The M3, both directions, junction 2. Queuing traffic on and off the M25. That's due to roadworks. The A329M is down to one lane in both directions between Reading and Winnish. Again, down to roadworks. And Henley, White Hill, slow from Henley Road to Reading Road, and on the trains there are delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to signalling problems at Paddington.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Got the latest news. Here's Michelle Cross. Okay, so would you get involved if you saw some behaviour on the street, whether that's a parent inappropriately telling a kid off, or kids swearing, or someone swearing in front of kids? Let me do one comment from Facebook, and then we'll go to Val and Claire on the phones. Denise says, I recently stopped four children and asked them to leave a girl they were taunting alone and to stop using bad language. I waited until the girl they were taunting walked off. Then this lad of about 14, 15 gave me a look as much to say, what's it to you? I followed them for about 5 minutes until I knew they weren't following the other girl. And as I turned around, this young lad shouted something at me. So I caught up to him and said I would walk him home with them to meet their parents to tell them what I saw. Gosh, needless to say, I didn't. Well, you've kind of got to be careful, isn't it? When it's young people, 14, 15, 16, you've sort of got to be careful what you say to them and how you say it, because there's a chance that you might get in trouble. Val's in Basingstoke. Evening, Val.
Good evening.
Val, would you get involved?
I have been very, very tempted on a number of occasions, but being short, I think I might be easy meat if somebody wanted to beat me up.
Oh, are you quite wee?
I am quite small, yes.
Am I allowed to ask how small you are?
5'3".
5'3"? Oh, well, that's not too... Bruce Lee was 5'3", and look at him.
I know, I haven't got quite the muscle power yet.
But do you think this is something that, if more people, and I can understand why some people are reluctant to, and it's not always advisable, and if you're, I'm not in any way suggesting that people go out and do this, but if more people did this, if more people said, can you pick up that Coke can, or don't swear like that, it would make things a little bit better, wouldn't it?
I think it would. I think it would be a great deal better. I think people are very afraid. I think that they're afraid they might get beaten up, or how people may react.
Yes.
I mean, I've noticed that people have noticed with me that I think I have a very disapproving look sometimes. I'm not aware of what's on my face, but I can see that they can see that I don't approve of what they're doing.
Ah, you give them the old skunk eye.
Yeah.
Val, I'm picking up an accent. I can't quite place it. Where is it?
I was born in Zimbabwe.
Zimbabwe, of course. I couldn't put my... How long have you been over here?
22 years, nearly 23 years.
You've still got the accent.
I know, it's not going away. I can't hide anywhere.
Val, you cannot hide it anywhere. Thank you very much indeed. That's quite strong for 22 years in this country, isn't it? Claire's in Caversham. Hello, Claire.
Hello, good evening.
Claire, would you get involved?
Yes, well, I did. Well, actually, I'm 5'3" as well, but I'm 5'3½, so maybe that's what makes
the extra half an inch. It gives you that aura, yes.
That's right. So, I take the view that, actually, because I'm only small, no boy worth his salt would bother trying to attack me, really, because it would be too embarrassing.
Yeah.
But, yes, there was an incident quite recently on a Friday night where the neighbours across the road were having a party, a 17-year-old party, and a load of young people congregated outside our house at about 9 o'clock, and they were making noise. They weren't really causing any trouble, but I did call the police and just say, look, just to let you know, this is what's going on. But then they were making more and more noise, so I went out to join them and said, look, what's going on here? Are you waiting to get into a party you've not been invited to? And they said, yes. And I said, well, you must have better things to do than hang around on Chiltern Road and, you know, on a Friday night. And they said, more or less, no, we don't. But, you know, the cool ones moved away from me, because it's a bit embarrassing having a 40-something-year-old woman coming and chatting to you. But others actually stayed and chatted, and they were just basically bored, I think, and
yeah.
had nothing to do.
Yeah.
And they did eventually move away. But then at about 11:30, I'd gone to bed, And it all kicked off outside, and there was a sort of rougher group of lads outside. Oh, and then they started trying to, a couple were trying to have a fight, but they're only 16, they weren't really managing it, but they...
so dismissive, I love it! Well, they're only 16, they couldn't quite fight properly.
But they hit our neighbour's car, just sort of with a hand, and so I stormed outside, and I was in my pyjamas by this point, but I had my coat on. My husband came out as well. And we just shouted at them, you know, what's going on? I moved my car down the road to get away from them. But then I came back and we joined in and just said, look, what's going on? Don't be ridiculous. And I spoke to some of the girls standing there and said, look, you don't want to get mixed up with this. Why don't you move down the road out of the way? And they would say, oh, no, our mums are finding us on Google Maps. We've got to stand here.
Gosh.
So I said, no, you'll be fine. And, yeah, and they were trying to, these boys were saying, you know, oh, you're really hard. And they're trying to beat each other up, but they as I said, they weren't really sort of hardcore East End London boys, no. So sort of Reading boys.
Isn't it, I was just thinking there, Claire, how times have changed. Their mums were trying to find them on Google Maps. When I wanted to get picked up by my mum, and I bet you did the same thing, I'd go to a phone box, put 10p in, I'd let it ring 3 times, then I'd hang up.
That's right.
Exactly, so it wouldn't cost you 10p, and mum would get the secret code and know exactly where and when to meet you.
Well, that's it. Well, I was telling them, a couple of them were asking me whether there was a bus, and I said, oh yes, there's one at the end of the road, and they didn't believe me for some reason. But actually then the police came up, and I think came roaring up the street, and all the sort of innocent people ran away. they'd had a report that someone had seen a knife, so they were frisking the boys, but I don't think they found anything, but dispersed it. And it's a real shame, because the girl whose party it was, I think someone who's a bit of a bully had got wind of it and put it on Facebook.
Oh dear.
And it's that sort of thing. But I trained as a youth worker briefly. Oh, okay.
So you kind of know how to handle these situations a bit then.
Well, I think if you just chat to people, I mean, obviously there's some people who are absolutely off their heads and they've got knives and they're really dangerous, but a lot of the time, and I think as a sort of a middle-aged woman, you can diffuse the situation a bit. If I was a bit more worried about my husband. That
if a bloke gets, I mean, I'm 6'3", and if a 6'3" bloke in his 40s gets involved, it can suddenly become a bit intimidating. Claire, I've got to move on, but thank you. 0345 900 1041. Would you get involved? And do you remember that when you were out at the pictures when you were a kid, to get your mum to come and pick you up, 10p in the phone box, let it ring 3 times, hang up, you get your 10p back, didn't cost you a penny, and she'd know. What if she was on the loo, or what if she was out in the back garden? What if she missed? Well, she'd be out in the back garden at night, but what if she missed those 3 rings? 0345 900 1041.
This is BBC Radio Berkshire
with Ian Lee.
Now, the opening ceremony of the Commonwealth Games is just a few hours away. Much of the ceremony, which is being held at Celtic Park, is being kept secret. But we do know that Celtic or Celtic, I always get confused. Celtic, of course. We do know that Rod Stewart and Susan Boyle will be performing as Glasgow welcomes athletes from more than 70 countries to compete over the next 11 days. Well, our Commonwealth Games reporter Chris Gorham is in Glasgow. Chris, what's going on in the background, and what's happening?
Yes, hello from Glasgow Green, which is a park in the centre of Glasgow. And I don't know if your previous guest is still around, but we might need a bit of crowd control later on.
We'll send her up. I think she'd be a bit tasty up there. We'll send her up.
Yeah, we might need it. But no, the party's about to start. The opening ceremony happens just down the road from here at Celtic Park a little bit later on tonight. This is Glasgow Green, a lovely park in the middle of Glasgow, which has been transformed into a party venue. They're calling it the Glasgow 2014 Festival. I'm looking at one of those Glastonbury Festival-style stages with the arched roof. And Lulu is going to be putting on a concert later on there. And then either side, we've got the big screens where everyone will be watching the opening ceremony. So we've got Lulu here in the park. And then in the stadium later on, you've got Rod Stewart and Susan Boyle. So if you're Scottish and you can sing, you've probably got a gig on tonight somewhere.
I don't get the rock, because Rod Stewart's not Scottish. He just pretends to be Scottish, doesn't he? He's not a real Scot.
He's associated enough, isn't he, to be the... It would be strange if they didn't have him at an event like that. Particularly in Celtic Park. Do you remember when Celtic beat Barcelona a couple of years ago and he was pictured crying his eyes out, wasn't he, in the stands?
Right. Yeah, you're right.
That is the place
now,
for him.
Always with these big sporting events, the Olympics, the World Cup, all of these things, there are all the stories about how the places aren't ready. Is Glasgow ready?
I'm going to have to disappoint you on that front, because yes, it is. I've been around several of the venues over the last two or three days, and I haven't even seen anybody with a paintbrush sort of putting a few panicky finishing touches. They seem remarkably calm and ready. The one group of people I found that may not be ready are the Sri Lankan cyclists. So I don't know if you've heard about this.
This is a brilliant story. Tell it again. It's wonderful. This? Yeah, wonderful.
Yeah, they were stopped by the local constabulary here in Scotland earlier on today. Four members of the Sri Lankan team, because they were caught cycling along the M74, which is one of Scotland's busiest roads, a motorway right outside Glasgow, and they were spotted, four of them, having picked that as the perfect place for a training run a little bit earlier on. So they had to be stopped and told to perhaps do their practicing somewhere else. But that's one of those sort of teething problems that all the meetings that will have gone on over the last 7 years since Glasgow won the right to host these games, I bet that's the one item that never came up. What if some Sri Lankan cyclists start training on the M74? It's the one thing they hadn't thought of.
If I were the other cycling teams, I'd be a bit wary of the Sri Lankans. It shows they're well hard. They're the toughest team on bikes, aren't they?
Exactly. The idea that when we have all these marathons and these road races, what they do is they shut the roads. Well, that's namby-pamby, isn't it, these days? If you're from Sri Lanka, let's just keep the traffic running and have the sport alongside it. Add a little bit of extra chutzpah to it.
Chris, we know the entertainers at the ceremony. Do we know anything else? Or is it all a big surprise?
Yeah, we know some of the entertainers. Rod Stewart and Susan Boyle are the ones they've announced. There will be surprise guests as well. I was at the dress rehearsal on Monday night for it, and even during that, there were frustrating little bits where they said, well, we're not going to tell you what's going to happen here, we're just going to move on to the next thing. So they've gone to great lengths to try to keep things secret and surprising. We do know the Queen will be there, of course, tonight with the baton having gone around the Commonwealth, containing a message which she'll read to the crowd tonight. That will mark the start of the Commonwealth Games. It'll be officially open, and the sport gets underway tomorrow morning. 11 days of sport. So Bradley Wiggins, Mo Farah, Usain Bolt, Tom Daley, just four names for you. It may not be the Olympics, but it is an A-list event in terms of sport.
Chris, enjoy yourself this evening. It sounds very, very noisy.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Chris Gorham in Glasgow. Let's get some of the travel, though, in Berkshire. M25 clockwise, junction 11 to junction 16, there's queuing traffic. Anti-clockwise, 16 to junction 10, there's slow traffic. The M3, both directions at junction 2, there's queuing traffic on and off the M25 due to roadworks. The M40, northbound, junction 4 to junction 5, that's High Wycombe to Stoke and Church. One lane is closed, and there's heavy traffic due to a multi-vehicle accident. The A404 southbound, queues from Marlow to Bisham roundabout. And on trains, delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. That's due to signalling problem. Coming up in the next hour of the show, we'll have some good music. We might hear a little bit more from Andrea McLean. And also, there's still a chance for you to get your phone calls in. If you saw something happening in the street, would you get involved? Turns out most of you are rather brave. And if you haven't done it already, you would certainly consider it. Maybe you've been told off in the street for doing something naughty. 0345 900 1041. Or you can send me a text, 81333. Start your text box.
BBC Radio Berkshire with Ian Lee.
Now on BBC Radio Berkshire.
Ian Lee.
And suddenly it's 4 minutes past six. There's only 56 minutes of this left before Mark Forrest takes over. Gosh. Lots to cram in, though. We'll get TV with Shem. You can hear the interview I did with Loose Woman, Andrea McLean. We'll also talk a bit more about the top story of the day, about the building developer Costain and the fine that's been imposed on them after the death of Mark Williams. And do you want to give us a call? Would you get involved if you saw something happening in the street? 0345 900 1041.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
I've just remembered the one incident I would never get involved with in the street again. I've done this, and I've heard this story from lots of other people. The boyfriend and the girlfriend fighting. The boyfriend and the girlfriend fighting, particularly late at night. I've seen this, I've got involved, and I will never do it again. The boy was, I mean, I was in my 30s, about 10 years ago. They were probably in their 20s, maybe a bit older. And the boy was being really nasty to the girl, really nasty. Swearing, grabbing, there may even have been a slap. She was in tears. It was awful. So, of course, I went home and said, hey, excuse me, love, are you all right? And he turned on me.
and she turned on me. They both turned on. None of your business. You go on, get out of here. All kind of, obviously, they didn't sound like something from a 1960s Cockney film. But they both turned on me. And he slapped her and was grabbing her and shaking her and dragging her. And she didn't want to go with him. Excuse me, love, you're all right. They both had a go at me. And I've heard this is quite a common phenomenon. That if you get involved in a boy and a girl fighting, they both turn on you. So, have you done it? Have you got involved in a situation? Someone's dropped litter, someone's been having a fight, someone's been swearing? Or are you too scared? And do you think, actually, do you know what? No, I wouldn't get involved. Give me a call if you wouldn't. I'm not judging you. I'm just keen to get the reasons why you wouldn't. Is it because you're scared? Is it because you don't think it's any of your business? You think it's someone else's responsibility? I'm only here for another 50 minutes and I'm not back tomorrow. So if you want, if you've been thinking all week, oh, I wouldn't mind giving him a call. Now is the time to do it. 0345 900 1041. Now, the big story of the day, and a very sad story. The building developer Costain has been fined £525,000 for the death of a construction worker during the building of a shopping development in Newbury. 41-year-old Mark Williams died when the telehandler he was operating, it's kind of like a big forklift, fell on top of him in July 2011. Well, BBC Radio Berkshire's Catherine Bolsover has been following this story.
Well, it was the summer of 2011 when the father of two, Mark Williams, was crushed under a telehandler. That's like a cross between a cherry picker and a crane. And it was while he was lifting tiles onto a roof at the Parkway development in Newbury. Two companies, the developer Costain and the contractor Attlee Roofing, went on trial at Reading Crown Court for breaching health and safety rules. The trial heard Mr. Williams had to make too many short turns with the machine in a crowded area. Mr. Williams' family said that he'd complained about working conditions. Costain was then found guilty of failure to ensure the health, safety and welfare of a worker.
And Costain was sentenced today.
Yes, the Maidenhead-based company was fined £525,000, having also been found guilty of exposing another employee to a risk of harm and failing to carry out proper risk assessments. Passing sentence, Judge Angela Morris said Costain fell short of its obligations and that lessons had not been learned from two previous incidents involving lifting equipment. In a statement delivered after the verdict, the family said they had mixed feelings about the result, adding that he was let down by Costain and Attlee's Roofing. The day before he died, he told Costain in a meeting that someone was going to get killed. And sadly for us, someone did get killed. It was him, it said.
Well, Steve Hill is from the Health and Safety Executive and has been keeping track of this case. I spoke to him earlier in the show and I put it to him that people have the right to feel safe at work.
Absolutely, Ian. And I think this is the very strong message that cases like this would send out, hopefully, to all sorts of other duty holders in the construction industry. As you say, Mark Williams went to work as normal to operate a piece of machinery called a telehandler. Because he didn't have enough space in which to operate, something that the principal contractor, Costain, had been warned about, including by him. Mm. He did his own work, and very sadly, he didn't come home that night.
I've been trying to get an image to. I don't know what a telehandler is. I've heard this word bandied around on BBC Radio Berkshire all day. What do you know what it is?
Most people would think of a telehandler as being a large forklift truck.
Oh, okay.
So in this particular case, it's like a forklift truck, but it has a long extending boom so that it can reach up high. But when that boom is at ground level, it sticks out a long way forward, making the machine longer.
Mm.
And so the reason that Mark felt that he needed to raise it up into the air, which is what ultimately caused it to be less stable and to turn over, is because that allowed him to have a little bit more room to manoeuvre the vehicle and to therefore be able to turn it around as he needed to load some tiles up onto the roof.
Mark knew this was dangerous, and in fact, the horrible irony is he went to his bosses the day before saying, I think someone's going to get killed. What power do workers have if they suspect that the environment they're working in isn't necessarily that safe?
Well, the evidence suggests that Mark did exactly the right thing. He brought to his employer and to the main contractor's attention the fact that there was a dangerous situation going on, and the evidence suggests that other people may have done exactly the same thing. So your question is, what power do they have? Well, it's very, very difficult because, of course, people who are on construction sites or indeed in factories or elsewhere are always working for someone. There's always that tension between making a fuss and complaining about something that is quite clearly unsafe, which is entirely reasonable and sensible, and a good employer would take notice of that and do something about it. But there's that tension between doing that and being under a bit of pressure to complete the job. Now, we'll never know exactly how that balance was struck on this occasion, but of course what we do know is that Mark and others raised the issue, but it wasn't dealt with, and then very sadly, the tragic consequences that we know about occurred.
A mum's lost her son, a man's been killed. If I'm honest, £525,000, it doesn't sound that much to me.
Well, I think all we can say there, Ian, is what the judge suggested in her summing up, and that is that whatever penalty she gave, it was not in any way reflective of Mark or anybody else's life. That's not what her and the court's role is about. Their role is to assess all the evidence that they heard over a 5-week trial, and she then needs to come to a conclusion as to what the appropriate criminal sanction is for, in this case, Costain as a company. And in doing that, she hopefully is sending out a very serious message to those involved in the industry to say, you know, this is a very serious failing and you all need to sit up and think, what can you do to improve? It's not about reflecting, of course, the value of a life.
How does it work on a site like this? Would the health and safety, would someone like you go in and examine the site, or is it all self-contained? Would it all have been done by Costain?
Well, the legal duty is on the lies with the contractors. In this case, the principal contractor was Costain's. So they have duties, and all the subcontractors working for them have duties to comply with the law. The Health and Safety Executive, my organisation, puts out all sorts of guidance on our website and in other ways. And where resources allow, we make unannounced visits to sites and to elsewhere, and of course we also have to investigate all sorts of serious well, obviously in this case deaths and other serious injuries, and like lots of other organisations, of course, you know, we've had to pull in our belt, so there probably are not as many inspections as we would like, which would make it all the more important that duty holders take proper precautions in managing their serious risks.
And of course, sadly, Steve, health and safety has become a joke, hasn't it? Because you hear all of these silly stories about councils not putting on fetes and schools not doing egg and spoon races for health and safety. But what it really boils down to, its truest essence, is protecting workers, protecting people like Mark, isn't it?
Well, that is absolutely right, Ian. And for many years, the Health and Safety Executive has had a campaign that we've called Sensible Health and Safety, that we've tried to sort of counter all the rumours that often appear in some parts of the press, that it's not about conkers, bonkers and all these sorts of things. Yeah. It's actually about trying to prevent very serious injury and ill health, and in some cases, as you rightly put at the beginning of this interview, situations where somebody goes to work, do their normal job, and sadly doesn't come home at night. That's what we're interested in. We're not interested in the triviality and some of the other things that sometimes talked about in the press.
Do you think all those stories about kids can't play conkers and kids can't climb trees, it's done a disservice and makes your job in some ways a little bit harder?
Well, I think you're quite right, and we do our best to whenever we come across anybody, whether it's businesses or individuals, to explain that the vast majority of what we deal with are very serious risks where people can get badly hurt, killed, or suffer serious ill health that can affect them for the rest of their life. Of course, sometimes, particularly when it comes to children or the elderly or other vulnerable groups, some of the lower risk issues get talked about more. But realistically, it's where people are going to get seriously hurt or affected for the rest of their life, where we're trying to encourage people to do proper risk assessments and take precautions.
That was Health and Safety Executive Steve Hill speaking to me earlier on in the show.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
6:17, it's, let's get some travel, shall we? M25 clockwise, junction 10 to junction 16, queuing traffic, and then back the other way, 16 to 10. It's busy and it's slow. The M4, London bound, junction 7 to junction 4B, that's Slough West to the M25. There's heavy traffic there. The A404 southbound, there are queues from Marlow to Bisham roundabout. The A34 northbound, slow from the M4 junction to M4 junction 13, to Beedon. Let's do Henley, White Hill, slow from Henley Road to Reading Road. Maidenhead Bath Road, slow from Glenville Place to Boyndon Road. And on the trains, there are still delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading.
See Berkshire's travel cameras online
at bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
6:18, let's get the travel, please. It's one of those days. I'll just give up. Let's have the news, please.
The Commonwealth Games across the BBC.
Oh. I'm laughing because it's one of those days. It's one of those days. You know one of those days when your tongue gets tied, your fat fingers continually hit the wrong buttons, or it's one of those. It's one of those. Listen, this is Ian Lee, BBC Radio Berkshire. I'm not back tomorrow. Phil is back tomorrow. So thank you for letting me come in and play for 3 days. I've thoroughly enjoyed it. If it's gone well, I may be back a little bit later in the summer. Who knows? If you want to give me a call, you've got 40 minutes. To do it. We've been asking, would you get involved? I saw a fellow last night in a shop. He was effing and jeffing. Really? And I said to him, hey, steady on, fella. There's young people here. And he swore at me even more. Have you got involved in someone swearing, someone dropping litter, a fight? Would you get involved? 03-45-900-1041. You haven't got much time to call me. So if you've been hovering over the phone all afternoon, do it now. 0345 900 1041. We may speak after this. We'll also get the latest from Shem and what we should be watching on television this evening. Okay, Shem is here with his daily roundup of the television. And it starts today, doesn't it, Shem?
It does.
There'll be people dancing in the streets at this. Not me. Not me.
It is. Well, look, I fully understand your worries here. It is the Commonwealth Games. It is up in Glasgow. And I can't remember a Commonwealth Games where this amount of excitement and hype it was involved. It was in Manchester not that long ago, I seem to remember. Mm. And I don't think it made the papers there was hardly any coverage whatsoever. But I guess this is the London 2012 Olympic effect that has brought into this. So we have an opening ceremony. It is in Celtic Park in Glasgow. I don't think they've got quite the budget that Danny Boyle had, and Danny Boyle didn't have quite the budget they had in Beijing. So I'm not suggesting it's going to be on the cheap, but let's manage expectations here.
There'll be a couple of kids throwing a few paper aeroplanes and swearing, and that'll be it.
I think I don't think it's going to reflect modern day Glasgow in that respect, but I think there'll be a lot of people in funny costumes dancing. I have seen the mascot, which seems to be a rather frightening thistle.
Gosh.
Which is,
you don't want to mess with that.
No, you don't. But anyway, you have got something like 4,500 athletes who are going to parade through. There's a 100-meter wide TV screen, the biggest of its kind, that's going to connect the stadium with the rest of the world. You've got 71 nations coming, and a lot of them, thankfully, won't be Russian or American or Chinese. So we may get some medals.
We might win something.
Exactly.
We
didn't do too badly in 2012.
So it's going to be a big spectacle, isn't it? And I do like these big spectacles and these big kind of affairs that kick things off. So.
Well, it's being done by the people that did the events at the... they did the opening and the closing ceremony of Athens 2004.
Oh, brilliant. Okay, well, that was great.
So I think, it should be, if nothing else, even if it's on a budget, it should have some good points.
Now, 9 p.m, BBC yes. 4, tonight. This, now we're talking, Our Planet from the Air.
Absolutely.
Oh, I mean, this... already the title has got me sucked in like a fool. It sounds brilliant.
It is 90 minutes of basically aerial footage taking over 54 different countries. And really, I mean, it's a little bit new agey, some of it, but it's all photographed by, filmed by the very famous French aerial photographer, Yann Arthus Bertrand.
Oh, of course, Yann Arthus Bertrand, yeah.
And he will be showing us quite how stunning. This is what your HD television is made for. I'm assuming you've moved into the 21st century and have an HD television.
Only just. Although there's no point, because the way my kids treat it by drawing on it and kicking it and prodding it, it's not going to last much longer.
Well, they're not the most robust of things. That's very true. Unlike our Pi television when I was a kid. It's what your HD was invented for. And if you can, watch it on BBC 4 HD because it will be absolutely stunning. That is, of course, if you aren't watching the Commonwealth Games.
Or you could tape it. You set the timer on the VHS and record one and watch the other.
The timer on the VHS. I think we're beginning to show your vintage already, Ian.
to be honest, I never had a VHS, Shem. I had a Betamax.
Excellent.
Yeah, and I used to get beaten up at school for it. I did. It was better quality, though.
It was better quality until you couldn't buy the tapes anymore.
Exactly. Shem, excellent stuff. Thank you for these.
My pleasure.
This is BBC Radio Berkshire.
With Ian Lee.
There's a phone in one day. The weird things you got beaten up at school for. Honestly, you kids these days who are too young to remember the Betamax and VHS wars of the early 80s. Look at the children who are producing this show going, what are you talking about, Grandad? The Betamax VHS wars of the early 1980s, children. I was on the side of Betamax. Better quality, less choice. And guess what? I backed the wrong horse. I got it completely wrong. And I lost, and I got beaten up in the school playground as a direct result of it. Thanks very much, guys. We've got loads of facebook.com/BBC Berkshire. I haven't got time to do it now because I've witted on about that. Loads of comments about would you get involved if you saw something happening in the street, kids swearing, adults swearing, people dropping litter. Go and put your comments on the Facebook page, and I will get to those very, very soon.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
Every 15 minutes.
And as it happens.
Right, it's 6:29. Let's have a look at some of the roads, shall we? Let's try and do some of the different ones this time. The A404 southbound, there are queues from Marlow to Bisham Roundabout. The A329M, it's down to one lane in both directions between Reading and Winnersh due to roundabouts. Oh, man alive. Michelle, what must you think of me? You probably got excited I was coming here and thought, hey, a cool professional guy is coming. And I can't even string a sentence together when it's written in front of me. Due to roadworks. Caversham, Peppard Road, queues down the hill towards the Queen Anne School traffic lights. And in Maidenhead, Bath Road, slow from Glenville Place to Boyndon Road.
Get the latest travel you trust online.
bbc.co.uk/Berkshire.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
6:30 on the nose. Let's get the news now with Michelle Cross.
And the actress Dora Bryan has died at the age of 91. Her career spans nearly 80 years and included programmes such as Last of the Summer Wine and the film A Taste of Honey.
Oh, I mean, fair play, that's an old actor. Dora Bryan, though,
yeah,
a legend.
I know.
Oh, an absolute legend. That's very sad. Michelle, thank you very much. Right, let's get the sport now. Here's Nick Johnson, Nick.
And now...
I set you a challenge ages ago, and I've not forgotten it, young man. I wanted a horse feed specialist, because it sounds like such a bizarre job.
Well, it's funny you should say that, because on the line is horse feed specialist, or equine nutritionist, Sarah Braithwaite from Forage Plus in Cheshire.
Hello, Sarah.
Hello, how are you doing?
I'm very well, thank you very much. A horse feed specialist, equine nutritionist, to give it your Latin title. It's a very specific world to get involved in. Why did you get involved in that?
Well, really, I'm not really a nutritionist as much as a horse owner who became obsessed with horse nutrition because I own horses. And when you own horses, you want them to be the healthiest you can possibly make them.
What's a good thing to give a horse these days? For all I know are sugar lumps and apples.
Actually, horses are very sensitive to sugar. You have to be careful how much sugar they have. The best thing you can feed your horse is grass or hay or haylage, but low sugar grass, hay or haylage.
Hang on a second. Low sugar grass?
Yeah.
Where are you getting this diet grass from?
Well, most horses obviously live out in fields, and then in the winter they eat hay, which is dried grass. You can give them other feed as well, but their main source of food is always forage, which could be grass, could be hay, or it could be haylage.
Sarah, if a horse has been a particularly good boy or girl, what would you give it as a treat?
Many people give carrots. Horses like carrots.
Yeah.
There's lots of products in the market that it's a bit like the dog food industry, I suppose.
Yeah.
You know, they've seen a market for horse treats. But in general, those horse treats are made out of dried grass that's compressed together with some herbs in it, maybe some mint or something like that.
And
horses do love carrots and they do love apples.
Okay. Is it true, finally, Sarah, if you blow up a horse's nose, it falls in love with you?
I think some horses like that, some horses don't. The best thing to do is to present the back of your hand to a horse so it can sniff it. That's called the horseman's handshake.
The horseman's handshake. You give it the back of your hand and it sniffs it.
Yes.
Sarah, you've been a cracking sport. I really appreciate you
coming
on.
Thank you, Sarah.
Thank you very much indeed. Although, Nick...
Yes.
That wasn't... Now, come on. She wasn't technical. I mean, she was great. She was great.
Yes.
Excellent guest.
Yes.
Very, very interesting. I could have sworn I'd been told if you blow up a horse's nose, it falls in love with it. She wasn't an equine nutritionist. She had horses and she fed them.
I tried my best.
You did try.
What can I say?
Well done. You did try. Tony
Blackburn. Friday night from 7 here on BBC Radio Berkshire.
I got a hug from Tony Blackburn today. I did. He saw me and he embraced me and I felt very, very special. Hey, I'm nearly done. Thank you very much for all of your phone calls and texts and emails and things. I really enjoyed myself. I hope you have as well. Phil will be back tomorrow, so don't panic, Mr. Mannering. And fingers crossed, if all goes well and the bosses give me their blessing, I might be back for a couple of weeks in August when Phil has a holiday. Don't go sending, you know, rude emails to the boss saying we don't want this plum back. That would be... We've got kids to feed. Two kids to feed, so just think about that. How much do I love the Beach Boys? Man alive. One of the greatest bands in the world. Aren't they? You'd be a fool if you didn't agree with that simple statement. Listen, this is pretty much my time is up. I'll give you some travel in a second. Thank you very much, everyone who called in and said nice things on Facebook and took part in the show. Much appreciated. Don't panic, though. Phil will be back tomorrow.
BBC Radio Berkshire.
Travel you trust.
As it happens.
The roads are busy, basically. I could stop it there and it would pretty much make sense. Let's have some specifics, though. The M25 clockwise, junction 10 to 16, it's queuing. And back the other way, 16 to 10, it's very slow as well. The M3 southbound, junction 3 to junction 4, that's Bagshot to Frimley turnoffs, very slow traffic. The M4 Londonbound, junction 7 to junction 4B, heavy traffic towards London. Shall I carry on? I might as well. There's a lot. The M40 northbound, junction 2 to 5, heavy traffic due to a multi-vehicle accident. The A404 southbound queues from Marlow to Bisham roundabout. The A34 northbound slow from M4 junction 13 to Beeden. And on the trains aren't too bad, although there are delays on First Great Western services between Paddington and Reading. Hey, surprise, surprise, it's due to a signalling fault at Paddington. Could it be anything else, you have to wonder? Do stay tuned, though, to BBC Radio Berkshire. Coming up after 7, you've got Mark Forrest and, tantalisingly, Mark is following a 64-year-old farmer's first trip to London. I've seen a picture of this farmer. He's got a massive ticket. It's like, you know when you get a giant check for... You win a giant check on the pools or something. He's got one of those, but a train ticket. I think he's made it himself. Mark will be doing other stuff as well. Don't panic.